Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What's up, guys? Today's date is Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Steven Masso, and as always, you're listening to Via the Source. Now, there have been a ton of moves around the NFL. One team in particular that has not been making a lot of moves is the Miami Dolphins, but that does not mean there isn't a lot to talk about when it comes to the team. So, to start it off, I would say the main feeling to take away from this day in free agency is that the Dolphins are taking a very slow process to this rebuild. There are players that could have been chased by the Dolphins, but they elected not to, just kind of to stay calm. And then there's a player in Juwan James, the right tackle, who the Dolphins elected not to re-sign and will be going to the Denver Broncos. So to start off with Juwan James, I said before, if the Dolphins were to extend him, I completely understand, because the offensive line is one area, one group of positions where I could see you investing a lot of money in there, and I have no problem with it, because building the trenches, I think, is so vital and could be such a game changer for a lot of teams. Just look what it did for the Cowboys. So I had no problem if they elected to extend him. But what the Broncos did was they made him the highest paid right tackle in football. And that's something that I completely understand the Dolphins not willing to match this offer. I think Juwan James is solid. He is above top 50%. He is slightly above average, but he is not the best right tackle in all of football. So from that aspect, I could see the Dolphins not wanting to pay him as such. So this is another move that I have to wait and see. It's not something that I can already completely bash the team for. It's something that I have to believe that there is a plan in place, and I just can't hate on it until I start seeing how it unfolds. Another player that the Dolphins will not be getting, a guy who I wanted them to chase after before, was Trey Flowers. And something that deals with both of these players is that I must have severely underrated or undervalued what the market had in mind for these two players. Trey Flowers, he signed a deal with the Detroit Lions that made him the highest paid edge rusher in all of football. So with him and Juwan James, the story is both the same. If the Dolphins decided to stay put, but they also decided to not overspend. And that's something that has been a kind of a theme with the Dolphins. They overspent for Mike Wallace. Some would argue that dumping all that money for Ndamukong Suh didn't really push that team over the edge. It didn't make the defense any more special, especially with how we saw the run defense. It didn't really help in that aspect. So the Dolphins decided to stay put. And while it doesn't really help the team in any way, it doesn't really show urgency to improve the team, it at least shows that there is a plan in place. And though it may be a process, it may be longer than many would hope, all that we can really do right now is trust in this process. So that is my takeaways from the Dolphins kind of staying put, letting Juwan James go and not making any move for Trey Flowers. Now, do I think that Trey Flowers is worth all that money? It's said to be in around the $16 million a year, $17 million a year area. I would say if it's the right system, go for it. And of course, he went to the Lions. Matt Patricia is the head coach over there. So there is some chemistry, I would believe, there. They went out and they got their guy. So from that aspect, I would say I understand. A lot of people are giving him slack because he usually gets in the 7 sacks a year area. But one of his big benefits, according to Pro Football Focus, is his ability to stop the run. That's his main thing. He gets a lot of tackles for losses. He gets a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So while it may not show up in the sack column, his impact is definitely there. It's definitely felt. So that's a good move for the Lions. The Lions also made another move, and they got former Dolphins wide receiver Danny Amendola on a 1-year contract. Now, Danny Amendola is surely not going to fill the shoes of Golden Tate that was left behind last season after he went to the Eagles. That is not going to fill his role. Golden Tate was a guy who lived off of the yards after the catch. Danny Amendola, while I don't think his athleticism is there, I don't think he is electric like that. I don't think he is a guy who's going to change a game anytime that he's on the field. I do think he is reliable, and I think that is a very underrated trait to have in the NFL, being reliable. I always heard that the best ability is availability. I think he is a good leader. All those aspects, he is great, but I don't think he brings enough from an athleticism standpoint to the field to truly be a game changer for the Lions. Could be a decent asset, but I think that's it at best. Now, another signing happened in regards to a former Dolphin, and this one pains me to say, but you know what? The Dolphins are in a rebuild. They're looking to the future, and it was Frank Gore. Frank Gore signed a one-year contract with the Buffalo Bills. Frank Gore had a very productive season with the Dolphins last season. I think the main thing was that it was clear that the Dolphins needed to head in a direction that was more focused on the youth. So giving Gore those carries, while it wasn't a bad thing, Gore was still being very productive with them. It was kind of denying the opportunity to the younger guys, the Kalen Ballage, the Kenyon Drake. So while the production was still there, there's no doubting that. But it's kind of like what the Packers had in Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones was there on the Packers roster for some time, and they never knew the talent that was there just because he wasn't getting the ball. So he finally started getting the carries that he deserved, and everyone was like, wait, why wasn't this happening from the start? And it was because someone else was getting the ball. So that's kind of the feeling I got with Kenyon Drake and with Kalen Ballage, just not getting the carries because they were going to Frank Gore. But again, Frank Gore really flashed his ability to find holes. That was truly remarkable. He was bouncing around like if he was in his prime at times, and it was truly remarkable. From a leadership standpoint, he is great. He is humble. He is respectful. I had the opportunity to speak with him, and like I said, he is just a downright honorable person. He is a future Hall of Famer, so I can't doubt that he will bring some type of production to the Bills. I think he will be solid. I think LeSean McCoy at times looked like he was starting to lose a gear. And LeSean McCoy's main thing was his elusiveness. He was also injured quite a bit. So it kind of scratched, it's a head scratcher a little bit, getting another veteran that one would say is definitely aging in Frank Gore. So it's kind of interesting. I do think the Bills will eventually get a running back in the draft, and that will be a guy who ends up getting a lot of carries. But one thing I learned after last season is that I will not doubt Frank Gore. I will give him all the respect that he needs. I will say that, maybe he could have another productive season. I'm not going to bet against him. That's all I'm going to say. Now, sticking with the AFC East, former Dolphins coach Adam Gase's Jets have been making some moves, and they've been actually pretty big moves. The first one is Minnesota Vikings linebacker, former Minnesota Vikings linebacker, Anthony Barr is going to be signing with the Jets, and he is a guy that I have loved his whole career. That guy is 6'5". He is huge. He takes up a big chunk of the field, and he is pretty quick. So that is a pretty good signing. The Vikings didn't want to meet that $14 to $15 million range that apparently the Jets are willing to meet. The Jets also made a move by signing former Redskins receiver Jamison Crowder. And Jamison Crowder, while it isn't the flashiest signing, Jamison Crowder is about as reliable as they come. Kirk Cousins loved Jamison Crowder. He was feeding him during their time in Washington. So I think that is a good move for the Jets. Like I said, it's not a guy who you should be worried about on a week-to-week basis, but he is about as reliable as they come. Picture him, like how I was talking about how Danny Amendola is a reliable player. Well, this is a younger, more electric version of that. So if I had to make a comparison, maybe Golden Tate, I wouldn't say he is as productive or he's going to have as good of a career as Golden Tate, but they kind of have a similar play style. And like I said, the reliability, a very underrated thing. I think that was a very solid signing for the Jets to make there with Jamison Crowder. Now, the Jets also are making a trade, and they will be receiving Raiders left guard Kelechi Osemele, who has been one of the best guards in football for some years now. He has a huge contract with the Raiders, so they kind of want just to get that off their hands, and he will be heading to the Jets. And Travis Wingfield, you can follow him at Wingfield NFL, he tweeted something that I thought was really funny. He's just like, oh, Gase, now you care about the guard position. I don't think Gase is going to make that same mistake again about undervaluing how important it is to have some very talented guys at the offensive line. So they went out and they got definitely a guy who is capable of being one of the best linemen in football in Osemele there in New York. So they're making some splashes, the Jets. Now, the next signing we have here is Landon Collins. Is becoming the highest paid box safety in football, signing with the Washington Redskins. And this, I think, is actually more telling than it looks. I talked about the Redskins a bit on the last episode, saying that I thought they had a decent team put together, just the Alex Smith injury, and it all began to crumble. I think the NFC East is a division that they are more than capable of just kind of secretly sneaking and winning that division. I think it's just kind of up for grabs. I don't really think any team in that division is just kind of a clear favorite. So they're really betting on the fact that they could still win now. And that's what they're doing with Landon Collins. They're putting a lot of money into their secondary. They still have Josh Norman, who's one of the highest paid corners in football. Now they get Landon Collins. This is a little surprising. It again showed me that maybe I was undervaluing what some of these guys' value was in this market. Because Landon Collins was a guy who I thought was great in 2016. He kind of regressed a little bit, a little more. I thought he was solid, but I didn't know he was going to become one of the highest paid defenders in all of football, and that's what he is now in Washington. Now, the next move is something that will make a lot of Eagles fans rejoice, something that will make them feel good, a little bit of reminiscing. DeSean Jackson will be returning to where it all began. They are trading for him, and frankly, he is a guy that, I mean, he's secretly low-key, he's also getting up there in age. He's 32 years old, but man, he has not lost a gear. Like how I said, LeSean McCoy looks like he's kind of lost a gear. DeSean Jackson still looks very productive as a deep threat. In fact, last season, he had 774 yards, 18.9 yards a catch, a long of 75. He is still a deep threat. Of course, he was in that super inflated Tampa Bay offense with Jameis Winston, Ryan Fitzpatrick just chucking it downfield. But I think he's still kind of a viable deep threat. And that's something that you don't hear too often when guys are 32 years old. But I think DeSean Jackson is still doing pretty good in terms of keeping his speed intact. He is still looking very quick out there on the field. Now, the last, but definitely not the least important signing we have here is the Jaguars signing former Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles, 4 years, $88 million. The Jaguars finally look like they made a move for a quarterback. You know, it was a shame. It's something that I will say was one of the biggest mistakes in football, at least in modern, the past decade or so, was the Jaguars having such an absolutely stacked team. Jalen Ramsey, that whole defense was absolutely stacked. It was as clear as day after they lost that AFC Championship game, which frankly was a miracle they got that far. It was as clear as day after they lost that. All they needed was a quarterback, and they elected to stay put and stay with Blake Bortles. And that was one of the biggest mistakes I can remember in football, was that move right there, because they had an opportunity. They had such a great window with that team, and they risked it on Blake Bortles. That was just reckless. It was just unheard of. It was absurd. In all ways, that's what it was. So now, that Super Bowl that Blake Bortles couldn't get him to, the Super Bowl MVP that year was Nick Foles. They go out and they get him. It's a big price tag. Hopefully, they can salvage what they have. They have a lot of their key parts still there. But I just can't help but think, what a wasted opportunity. I do think Nick Foles is a pretty good option. I think he is better than a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL. I would put him around the Alex Smith tier of quarterbacks. I would put him above guys like Ryan Tannehill. I would put him above guys like Case Keenum. But I don't expect him to be in any Pro Bowl caliber conversations when the season comes to that point. I do think he could be enough to get them back into that playoff picture if their defense is able to maintain that very strong elite level. And if they could establish another very good run game like how they had in 2016 with Leonard Fournette, and they're able to pound the rock. Actually, no, that was 2017, my bad. 2017, if they're able to get a run game like that, I think they could be a playoff team again. The defense is still elite. That's all they need. Just Nick Foles be better. Average, maybe a little better than average, get a run game, the defense will do the rest. That's all the Jags need. Now, the last topic in today's episode is for my Dolphin fans. There's apparently a mutual interest between former Bills and former Browns quarterback Tyrod Taylor and the Miami Dolphins. And I see a lot of people hating on this move. You know, we don't want Tyrod Taylor. He's a guy who has been benched for Nate Peterman. He's a guy who's been benched for a rookie Baker Mayfield. Honestly, the options that are available right now, I don't hate the option of getting Tyrod Taylor. I don't think he is the most talented guy. I think he is inaccurate. I don't think he utilizes his wide receiver, something that Mike has been saying over on Dolphins Talk. I think those are all true points. But I do think he brings kind of a creativeness with this offense. When I'm looking at the other options who are available, I would rather have, I think, Tyrod Taylor over Blake Bortles for sure. If we got Blake Bortles end mean right now, that would be If the Dolphins got Blake Bortles, I think I would dedicate the first 5 minutes of every podcast to just kind of contemplating life. That's where it would be at. So I would definitely like Tyrod Taylor over Blake Bortles. I think I would like him over Ryan Fitzpatrick. Honestly, I think I would kind of put him in the same areas of Washington with Case Keenum. Kind of in that same area. But call me crazy, but I think the hate on Tyrod Taylor last season was kind of a little premature. I mean, in hindsight, of course, Baker Mayfield was a clear option. There was nothing wrong with that. But the Browns were two missed field goals away from starting the season 2-0 against one, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and two, the New Orleans Saints. And that was under Tyrod Taylor. And while he didn't have the greatest games, he was definitely putting the team in positions to win the game. So they could have been 2-0 if it wasn't for their kicker missing field goals. The Browns could have been 2-0 and Baker Mayfield would have stayed on that bench. But they went off, they tied the game, they ended up losing to the Saints, and then he had a horrible start the next game against the Jets, and he lost his job like that. So it's really, it shows you how important wins are to a quarterback, to his value. Because all the kicker had to do was make some kicks, and then Tyrod Taylor has a 2-0 stat next to his name, and he's likely the quarterback, and he gets a lot more of a leash. But I think one interesting point that people are making is that they're worried that Tyrod Taylor would be too good, that the Dolphins would win too many games, that it would ruin the whole tank idea. And I think that's a little crazy to me, because I think the tank thing, tanking to get to the first pick, I think is a little unrealistic, and that's kind of reckless to do. I think rebuilding teams will generally be on the bad side, but going into a season with the absolute goal to be the worst team in football, I don't think ever happens. I don't think you'll truly ever be the worst team in football if that's what your goal is. I don't think that happens in the NFL in that way. Now, people will say, oh, but you're contradicting yourself. You said that tanking is real. Well, I think if a team's rebuilding, a team knows they're not putting the resources to win now, and they know the team will be bad, but they're not actively trying to be the worst team. They just know the team's going to be kind of bad. So it's going to put them kind of in the region of you know, still being in the top 10, maybe, you know, six picks or so. And I think Tyrod Taylor's a guy who could definitely, you know, he's not a game changer like that. He won't make your team too good, which is a lot of people's argument. They say Tyrod Taylor's going to make the team too good. I don't think Tyrod Taylor is that guy. If that's what your concern is, I think plugging him in there, your team could still get a top six pick with Tyrod Taylor in there. So I don't think that is a huge worry, but I don't think a team would actively try to make the team as bad as possible to try to get that first pick. So in that aspect, you know, I don't think that will happen, but I think a team will not use resources and keep the team kind of bad, still in range of trading up for the guy they want. That's a realistic scenario, but if the Dolphins want the number one overall pick, they could plug probably Luke Falk in there or Fails in there, and it would get them way more losses than getting Tyrod Taylor would. I don't know if the Dolphins would get, you know, like three wins with a guy like Fails in. But I don't think they want to completely try to be the worst team in football. I think they just want to rebuild. They know it may suck. You know, they're hopeful that it could put them in a position in 2020 to get the quarterback. I don't think they're going to actively try to be the absolute worst team in football. So in that aspect, Tyrod Taylor, I think, could be a viable option. Call me crazy, but I just think he's okay. I'm the only person I've seen on Twitter with this mindset, but I'm just not a huge hater on Tyrod Taylor. Like I said, I don't think he's great, but at this point in what the Dolphins appear to be doing, I don't think it's entirely a bad idea. Call me crazy. And that's how I'm going to end this episode, guys. Let me know what you think. As always, you can follow me on Twitter. That is @ShadySteven, @ViaTheSource. I appreciate all the downloads. It means a lot, guys. I appreciate all the shares on Twitter, too. All the kind words. Even if you disagree, love to hear your thoughts. It means a lot. Until next time, though, I'm Steven Masso, and this was Via the Source.